We are in the second week of our series that we're calling Christianese. We're exploring Christianese. And you might be wondering, what is Christianese? We've got a description behind me. But last week, and if you're following along in your bulletin, last week, this is what how we summarized what Christianese is. The language Christians use that is totally foreign to people outside the church and often misunderstood by people in the church. We gave lots of examples last week. Now, I could stand before you and say, I am a born-again, new creation because I've been washed in the blood of the Lamb. If I said that outside of a church setting, outside of people that are familiar with the church culture, how weird is that? Born-again, new creation. Okay. What's the deal with all the blood you're bathing in? That's just weird. So outside of the church culture, we need to be aware that maybe the language we use isn't that helpful. We talked about the fact that communication is more than simply saying something to someone. It is giving and the receiving of the information. And if the information has not been received, communication hasn't happened. And so we need to be more intentional about the language we use outside of the church setting. That said, we also acknowledge the fact that sometimes we don't fully understand what we're saying in the church culture. I'm a born again, new creation because I've been washed in the blood of the Lamb. You might be sitting here this morning and go, I think I understand that. I understand what he's getting at, I think. And so what we're doing during this series is more than just going, hey, we need to be intentional about the language we use outside of the church culture, but maybe we need to spend a little bit of time unpacking the language we use in the church subculture. So last week we looked at the phrase quiet time, total Christianese, and we said, well, this is basically you're taking intentional time to pray and read scripture. And hopefully this past week, many of you did that maybe for the first time. Maybe you did it more regularly. Or maybe it's like, you know, I had a season where I wasn't doing that at all, and this kind of jump-started me back into it. Great. So last week, we looked at quiet time. This morning, we get the word fellowship. Oh my goodness. You spend time in a church setting, you're going to hear the word fellowship. I was going to invite some guys over for a good time of fellowship. I think we understand, maybe, but outside of the church culture, they... Oh, you mean hanging out? Why did you say that? When we're looking at the church and their use of fellowship, there was a church in the... community that I lived in up in Washington, and the name of the church was Believers Fellowship. In lots of church buildings, you have a fellowship hall. Apparently, you can't do it outside of that hall. In lots of churches, after the worship service, there's a fellowship hour, usually held in the fellowship hall. And if Believers Fellowship had a fellowship hall and they had a fellowship hour, they hit the trifecta. But what is fellowship? Now, most of the time, seriously, most of the time when we talk about fellowship within a church culture, we're talking about, well, we're getting together. We're together with one another. We're eating. We're catching up. You know, fellowship. And that is a perfectly good understanding of fellowship, but we're going to call that fellowship 1.0. And here's the thing with fellowship 1.0. It's fine. It's a good thing. Just catching up. Talking football, talking the weather. How was your week? I mean, it's nothing wrong with fellowship 1.0. Actually, I take that back. There is something wrong with fellowship 1.0. Here's what's wrong with fellowship 1.0. If we conclude that's the full extent of what fellowship could and should be. Nothing wrong with it. It's just maybe a little incomplete. So if there's a fellowship 1.0, it can be described as people are together. Check. You see, people are together. Are they having fellowship? Sure. They're having fellowship. Great. But maybe there's more. Maybe a 1.0 fellowship isn't all that we could desire. So there must be fellowship 2.0. Check out that math logic right there. Richmond Unified School District coming through right there. All right. I knew one other person was going to appreciate that. Two people, actually. All right. Fellowship 2.0. Ben Stubblefield was writing about the fellowship that was being practiced in the first century church. And he said this, they joined together in the essentials of their core identity and purpose. I want you to pay attention to this part. Their core identity, something that set their fellowship apart from maybe fellowship 1.0, is they joined together in the essentials of their core identity. They shared an identity together. The late Brennan Manning, when talking about identity, said this, define yourself radically as one beloved by God. This is the true self. Every other identity is illusion. Define yourself radically as one beloved by God. The fact that we share this identity as people that have come to have the courage to accept acceptance, as people that have come to say, oh my goodness, we are beloved by God and we are embracing that truth, enables our fellowship to go to deeper, more powerful places. In 1 John chapter 1, the Apostle John says this, we proclaim to you what we have seen and heard, what we have experienced, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. Fellowship 1.0, people are together. Great. Fellowship 2.0, though, people together that have Jesus in common. And that takes the fellowship, that takes this hanging out, potentially to a different place. The reality of Jesus has the potential to take our fellowship to deeper, more powerful, and more significant places. This past week, my wife and I were out, and we were in a public setting, and a whole bunch of people there. It was a 1.0 kind of gathering. We were sharing something in common, but it wasn't Jesus. Jesus wasn't the thing that was this group was gathered around. It was fine. We were having a great time. But there was somebody there that we, oh my goodness, they're here too. And my wife and this person started talking. Now here's the thing. This person she was talking to was a Jesus follower. Here we are in the midst of a 1.0 setting, but all of a sudden there's a connection made with this other person and they have Jesus in common. And as a result, this other person looked at my wife and said, my daughter is going through something really difficult right now. Will you please pray for her? And it was not this flippant, you know, oh, pray for her. Yes, blessings on you. You know, there wasn't, it was a very intentional, powerful, significant moment because this person, realizing that they had something in common and that something with Jesus, allowed the nature of that gathering to change for those two. My daughter's really hurting. Will you pray for her? Yes. She ended up seeing that same person the next day. How's your daughter? I was praying for her. People together that have Jesus in common, there's the potential for that gathering to go to some very, very powerful places. But even this understanding of fellowship is maybe a little incomplete. Oh, let me go backwards. St. Patrick was quoted as saying, Christ with me, Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ in me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ on my right, Christ on my left, Christ when I lie down, Christ when I sit down, Christ when I arise. In other words, Jesus is with us. Jesus is with us. And that does powerful things for us as individuals to recognize, oh my goodness, Jesus is with me. Wherever I go, he is with me. But all of a sudden, when I'm with somebody else that shares that in common, it has the potential of taking that gathering to more vulnerable and powerful places. But even this understanding of fellowship might be a little incomplete. We got 1.0, people are together. 2.0, people together that have Jesus in common. And I'm going to refer back to what Ben Stubblefield said. They joined together, talking about the church in the first century. They joined together in the essentials of core identity and purpose. Their fellowship, their gathering, was more than just the fact that they had Jesus in common. But the fact that they had Jesus in common sent them on mission, sent them in a common direction. The Holman Bible Dictionary described fellowship like this: the bond of common purpose and devotion that binds Christians together and to Christ. When it comes to fellowship, I think Frodo and his friends might have a more complete understanding of it than sometimes we do in the church. Now, Lord of the Rings, first book, was called The Fellowship of the Ring. Let's see, we got a man, a wizard, an elf, a dwarf, another man, four hobbits. But they are a fellowship because they have a common purpose. They were brought together to take the ring into Mordor and have it destroyed in Mount Doom. If I've just ruined the end of it for you, I don't feel bad at all. That book's been out for almost 100 years, and the movie came out like, you know, over a decade ago. So you had your chance. But they were called a fellowship because they had a common purpose. They were together because they were doing something together. Our understanding of fellowship is impacted by this approach. The word koinonia is the Greek word that we usually translate into our English Bibles as fellowship. Koinonia means sharing, can mean close association or mutual participation. It refers to our shared identity and our purpose. If we really want to take fellowship to a really powerful place, we need to embrace the fact that we have a shared purpose to go along with our shared identity. And I'm going to get rid of this. And where's the handheld? We good, Cassie? Oh, you're on it. When we look at the early church, you look at Acts chapter 2, and we'll begin to see this fellowship that they experienced. It said they, referring to this early church, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. So this is talking about the early church that apparently was being described as a fellowship, word there, koinonia. They had a shared identity and a shared purpose. So here's the question I have, looking just at that text: what was their shared purpose? What did they do together? Well, they spent time being taught by the apostles. The breaking of bread could be describing communion and to prayer. They did this together. Their common purpose, their mission was to learn and spend time at the table and to pray together. But they did more than that. They sold property and possessions. They gave to people who had need. They opened their homes to one another. They praised God. These are things that they did together. But there's even more that they did. when you look at it, it says, wonders and signs, and the Lord added to their numbers daily. They participated in the miraculous work that God was doing. This was what their fellowship looked like. It was more than them just hanging out. And I would argue that it was more than just the fact that, hey, we hang out and we have Jesus in common. No, we're hanging out because we have Jesus in common. And he's called us to participate in what he is doing. Fellowship 1.0, people are together. Great. Fellowship 2.0, people together that have Jesus in common. Great. But Fellowship 3.0, bonded together by common purpose. So earlier when I said, hey, there's nothing wrong with Fellowship 1.0, then I went back and I said, well, maybe there is. If we're content with just a 1.0 version of fellowship, we're missing out on everything that comes with 2.0 and 3.0. And maybe God desires for us to experience more than just a 1.0 fellowship life. Are you taking full advantage of the fellowship opportunities here at Community Covenant Church? Now, are there fellowship opportunities outside of Community Covenant? Yes, 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 1,000 times yes. But for this morning, I just want to pose this question. Are you taking full advantage of the fellowship opportunities here? And I could pick out 3 primary fellowship opportunities. And again, even within our church, there's more than 3. But I just want to pick on 3. Sunday worship service, what we're doing right now. Gathering after worship service, taking place right out there. And small groups. Are you taking full advantage of the fellowship opportunities on the screen? Because here's the thing. It is really, really easy for us to settle into a 1.0 approach to all 3 of those. Even in the worship service, it is tragically easy to reduce our gatherings to fellowship 1.0 levels. Sometimes you come to church, sometimes I come to church, and we're content with, hey, we're here. And that's enough. Here I am, I'm a pastor, and I must confess that there are times that I show up on a Sunday morning and just the fact that, okay, I'm here, is enough. But maybe God wants more out of this gathering than us just showing up. How often do you come into the sanctuary and are completely ambivalent to the reality that Jesus is present? Emmanuel, God with us. How often do you show up, you sit down, and you are completely unaware by that truth? We failed sometimes to intentionally embrace our common purpose. And at Community Covenant Church, our purposes are connecting, growing, and serving. Connecting. We're about connecting with God and connecting with other people. Growing closer to God and growing closer to other people and serving God by serving other people. And the primary way that we connect with God as a group is right here at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings. It's obviously not the only one, but it's the primary way we do it. And oftentimes, we just show up. And we're fully unaware of the fact that God is present and he's worthy of our attention. This is going to sound almost childish. There are times that I'll catch myself right up here, and I'm so consumed by doing my job, you know, thinking about all the things I need to do during the morning, that I forget that God is present. I forget that our common purpose is to connect with God. And if I'm unaware or not paying attention to the fact that he's present, then I'm not joining us in our purpose. And sometimes I do Where's Waldo, but instead of Where's Waldo, I do Where's Jesus. I'm not kidding. I will sit right there, and every now and again when I become aware of the fact that I am just going through the motions, I'm not being intentional at all, I go, okay, wait a second. Do I believe that Jesus is present here this morning? And I know the answer is yes, But sometimes I have to be far more intentional. I go, do I believe that to be true? Yes, I do. Now, if I believe that he is present, where is he? Here's where my childlike faith comes in. I actually believe that God is so present that he's as real to me as Larry is to me in the third row. And I'll sit right there sometimes and do this. Now, when I do that, I just all of a sudden Jesus doesn't just pop up places. But you know what? There have been times on a Sunday morning, I'll go, all right, Jesus, where are you? I'll just kind of start looking around, and I'll just be overwhelmed by the fact that, oh my goodness, this person who I know is hurting, Jesus is standing with them right now. There have been times on Sunday mornings that I am so going through the motions, and all of a sudden I go, oh, wait a second, do I actually believe he's present? I'm supposed to be connecting with him. Where is he? And suddenly the fact that he is on a cross is powerfully true to me. What do you do on a Sunday morning in a worship service to make sure that you're joining with those around you in connecting with Jesus? When you sing, are you just singing or are you investing yourself in that moment, allowing it to go from words on a screen to cries from your heart? Some people, I don't like to sing. Fine, mouth the words. It might be what you need this morning. Are you taking full advantage of connecting with God along with the people around you? It is really, really super easy to be content with fellowship 1.0 style out there. Super easy. Now, this row was laughing at me a little earlier because Chris said, hey, for all the introverts in the room, you might not believe it, I am an off-the-chart introvert. Being up in front of a group of people is easy. It's a very private place. If someone were to say, break up into groups of six so we can talk about things, I will try to crawl under the chairs. It's just so hard for me. And so going out there becomes a super intentional thing for me. That is actually hard. It drains me. Not that I don't love you guys, I really do, but I gotta be super intentional. So if you're all the introverts in the room, I saw a sign that says, introverts unite in different parts of the room. Yes. Maybe if you're like me, it's like, you know what? I view that as important. Again, connecting, growing, serving. We're about connecting with God and connecting with other people. And one of the primary places we can do that is out there. And if you're like me and it's really hard, it's still worth it. But maybe you're one of those extroverted people. You really crazy people. Just because you're extroverted doesn't make you good at that. Because sometimes we go out there and we're just the most surfacey people ever. But if we actually believe what St. Patrick said was true, Christ with me, Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ in me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ on my right, Christ on my left, Christ when I lie down, Christ when I sit down, Christ when I arise, Christ at the round tables, Christ at the deviled eggs, Christ at the play structure, Christ in the parking lot. If we actually believe that Jesus is present and we share the reality of Jesus with the people we're in contact with out there, shouldn't the conversations be willing to go to deeper, more vulnerable places? And I say shame on me and shame on us when we think that just checking in with how the Seahawks are doing, and boy, I think your Packers are going to whoop us today. But if I think that that's the full extent, I went as far as I could go in my fellowship out there. Or am I going to choose to be present? And even if it wears me out, am I going to choose to be present with the people I'm with? Are you taking full advantage of your time out there? And it is surprisingly easy to be content with 1.0 levels in our small groups. Now, we say connecting, growing, serving. The primary place we grow in our congregation, grow closer to God and closer with one another, one of the primary places with it is with small groups. But even in those settings, sometimes like, you know what? I'm cool with just being 1.0. We're going to get together. We're going to talk about all kinds of surfacey things. We're not going to go deep about really anything, and that's just fine. When was the last time in your small group you guys had a conversation about what is your shared purpose for the gathering? You'd be surprised the different answers you would get. One of the things that sometimes hinders growth in a small group is there are unshared expectations about what that group is supposed to accomplish. And as a result, people get frustrated and then they leave. Unspoken expectations destroy relationships. When my wife and I were engaged, the couple that was doing our premarital counseling was going to be doing a marriage conference, and they invited us to come. So here's my wife and I, along with 50 married people, 50 couples. We're just kind of sitting there and taking notes and such. And the couple got up front, and they talked about what they called the expectation monster. Unspoken expectations can be very damaging. And so his wife said, you know what? Every time I went into our bathroom and I saw the towels just folded in half, it made me so upset with him because he knew that I always fold the towels in thirds. And every time I saw the towels in half, it just showed me how insensitive he was. He was not thinking about what was important to me, even though it's a little thing. And she was just going on and on. It was making me so angry. And then he stepped in and goes, here's the problem. She never once told me that she liked the towels to be in thirds. My future wife looked across the table at me and goes, you fold them in thirds, correct? And I looked at her and I said, no, you fold them in half. And she looked right back at me, no, you fold them in thirds. That way the outer edge is always taken on the inside and it is cleaner on the front. I said, no, you fold them in half. That way more surface area is exposed. It dries faster. And we looked at each other. Our entire marriage, we have had hooks in our bathroom. I have shared that story with everyone I've done premarital counseling with. And a few years ago, I got a picture from a couple in Kansas. And all it was bathroom towels on hooks in their bathroom. I'm like, well done, you two. But here's the thing. Unless we actually share our expectations, we are going to find ourselves getting frustrated and we won't understand why. So I'd really encourage you, in your small group, to be willing to ask this question. What is our shared understanding of the purpose of this fellowship? And guess what? You might not have all the same fellowship expectations. Might make for a really good conversation. Are you taking full advantage of the fellowship opportunities here? Now, this opens up a whole other conversation about the fellowship opportunities outside of here. I know that one hit me in the face on Friday when I was doing sacred space, which is the way I'm doing quiet time right now that I shared with you last week. And suddenly it's talking about the fact that, oh my goodness, everyone that you meet this day was created in the image of God. I read that right before I went into Costco. Now, It forced me to be more intentional about my interaction, my fellowship in Costco that day. We can have lots of conversations about what that fellowship looks like, but I'm going to continue to ask you, are you taking advantage of the fellowship opportunities here? We've got about 10 more minutes together. We're going to pray a little bit. We're going to sing another song. We're going to receive the offering. We're going to hear about some opportunities to serve. We'll hear the benediction, a charge for us as we leave. Are you going to take full advantage of the opportunity over the next 10 minutes to just connect with God? When you walk out those doors this morning and you interact with people, are you going to take full advantage of the opportunity you have to be in conversation with people that share Jesus in common? As you walk out the doors and go into your week, are you going to take full advantage of the opportunity you have to serve this community, to bring glory to God. And my encouragement, serve with somebody here and see what happens. God created us to be with one another. Let's do it well. Would you pray with me?